10:15, we'll call a meeting this morning of the House Agriculture Policy Committee to order. Have a couple of bills on the agenda in addition to walking through our major policy bill later on during committee time today. So welcome. Don't have enough yet for a quorum. So we'll start with our first bill and ask Representative Torkelson to come on down. First bill on today's agenda is House File 1415, and Representative Schumacher, would you care to move the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll wait until we have quorum.
Okay, we will just wait with that and ask Representative Torkelson to slowly talk through his bill as we await the committee members. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try to move at a reasonable pace this morning. House File 1415 deals with an important issue for agriculture. There are many operations that utilize liquid manure for fertilizer, and there are a variety of ways of applying liquid manure, but one of them is to actually use a drag line in the field where you pump the manure directly from the holding facility through a flexible pipeline to an implement in the field that applies the manure directly. Once you have this set up, of course, it saves a lot of work with loading manure into a truck or a spreader and hauling it to the field and then emptying that spreader and going back and refilling it. But to facilitate the movement of this manure through these flexible lines, the lines have to be run cross-country or somehow get the line from the holding facility to the field. In many cases, that means crossing roads. And right now, we can cross under roads through culverts perpendicular to the road without any problem. But when it comes to a situation where you might want to run parallel to the road, there are certain restrictions in place. The advantages for doing it using this type of application are, of course, that it's cost-effective. It saves wear and tear on our road systems because instead of hauling these heavy products down the road, you're actually transporting them in a pipeline instead. And there's also safety bonuses here because more trucks on the road means more traffic, means more opportunities for accidents.
So for just a second, Representative Torkelson, we have enough members here for a quorum. So Representative Schumacher, would you care to move House File 1415?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1415 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Policy and Finance.
And also, Representative Anderson, would you care to move the minutes for the meeting of March 11th?
So move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Representative. All in favor of the minutes of March 11th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. Minutes approved. Go ahead, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Representative Chair Anderson. So that is really the reasoning behind this bill. I have a testifier with me today who will hopefully enlighten you a little more.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Darren Macbeth on behalf of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Representative Torkelson explained the situation or the need real well in terms of livestock operations with manure lagoons and manure field application for putting liquid manure out for use on farm fields, and in the instance where different levels of government have oversight and robust permitting for running the drag lines or pipelines over right of ways and to the field where the manure application is needed. And it does happen year round, though there becomes a time either when manure lagoons are full or other times seasonally throughout the year where it's quite of critical timing and importance to move along and get these jobs done. And so I said there's different levels of government that have oversight with permitting. And by the way, all the farmers or contractors who are applying the manure in these ways through the drag lines are certified or licensed otherwise, meeting water safety requirements with Pollution Control Agency, with commercial applicator requirements with the Department of Agriculture. So that's not the issue here. This is one of efficiency. And so, oddly enough, when the pump lines go perpendicular or under a culvert, under a trunk highway, It's somewhat of a standard application process, and all that is in place through a permitting system that the Department of Transportation administers and other local units of government if it's not a trunk highway. But when the field location, which may be sections of, or not sections, but quite a distance away from the pump house or the lagoon, when the manure lines are run parallel or preferably down a ditch right away, with proper accommodation for approaches and other roads going through culverts or under the roads, or in some cases with a ramp type situation that's car stable and safety to the manure line where it would need to go over the road where there's not a culvert, that's all accounted for in safety and permitting. But where a drag line would need to go parallel down a highway, MnDOT frowns on that. And doesn't make common sense to us and to members of Minnesota Milk who are in some of these situations, and the Minnesota pork industry as well is in the same situation, though not able to be here today, of a common sense measure that this bill would allow for putting, clarifying that in the case of running drag lines parallel to a trunk highway with the proper safety and protocols that are already in place and they continue to meet would be the goal of this bill, and for those reasons we urge your support, and it's a common sense thing to do.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Chair Anderson. The other thing that I would emphasize is that these are temporary installations just put in place during the time that the manure is actually being applied to the field, and that's a fairly predictable length of time, depending, of course, somewhat on weather. But it's not like they're there for months on end. It's a few weeks at the most. And once the application is complete, the lines come right back out of the ditch and are no longer a issue.
And it would seem because of safety of getting some of these bigger rigs off the roads and the efficiency, as was mentioned, it would make sense to allow this. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Torkelson, I'm just wondering if, let's say the line runs along someone else's property to get to the field that you want, are they given notice of the that this application will happen, or just in case of some kind of a mishap or something?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bly. I honestly don't know. I believe the Department of Transportation is here today, and they probably won't be able to answer your question.
But it would be in the road easement in the ditch bottom. Any other questions from committee members? If not, anybody in the audience would testify for the bill? How about against the bill? Welcome to the Ag Committee. Identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name's Joe Pignato. I'm with MnDOT's Office of Land Management. I'm the Assistant Director for Right-of-Way, Utilities, Permitting. And I'm not here opposing the bill. I just want to let you know we're just here to get out some of our concerns. And we talked to the representative, and I think he's laid out the benefits that we have seen here. You know, when I first started looking at this bill yesterday, I started getting a lot of comments from all over MnDOT about positives and negatives, and I just wanted to go through some of those positives and the negatives. As the representative said, it will eliminate truck traffic, which will save our pavements. Some of these trucks are fairly heavy as they go up and down, and that is a positive thing that we do see. Some of the concerns that we're seeing here is really what we try to do is eliminate as many hazards above ground within our right-of-way for the traveling public. I know it's it happens rarely, but sometimes vehicles will leave the road, and if we have these types of pipelines out there, you know, they cause launching situations, could flip the cars over. Some of the pumping stations are fairly large. I've seen them where they're tractors with power takeoffs parked in the right-of-way or next to the right-of-way, not in the right-of-way, on private property. They also have some pumps that are on large trailers. So it's a big piece of metal sitting out there in the right-of-way, and those are one of the concerns that we have for safety-wise for this. We also have ATV use during the summertime. in our right-of-way at this time. And today with the crossings, we do require reflectors on these pipes when they are going through our culverts on the crossings. But, you know, those are one of the things that we were concerned with, too, with the ATP travel. There are some environmental concerns if the pipes do burst. They are under pressure. And how quickly can, you know, these pipes be shut down, these pumps be shut down? You know, what type of environmental accident would happen in that situation? And I know that's rare, and I know they run these pumps all the time, but it's one of those concerns. You know, and then if they do burst and they do get on the road, the effluent does get onto the road. It is a slippery condition during the summer that people aren't expecting could cause some accidents. And then another thing has to do with, you know, our maintenance operations. It's just another coordination aspect if we're going to be out there doing any mowing or guardrail type replacements, those types of things. We're going to need to, you know, just another coordination aspect. And we do have some requirements that we do today with our permits. And we think we can, some of these safety concerns, environmental concerns, we can handle it through the permitting process. But a couple of the things that we'd really like to see is the bill reads all right-of-way. Today, for our interstates and our freeway sections, we don't even allow public utilities to parallel within the control of access, which is the fence lines. So we like to keep all of those parallel runs outside the fence line. If this bill does get passed, we'd like to see that occur. There are situations with our bonding that we do require. Today with the crossings, it's like a $2,000 bond is what we require today. We probably look at increasing that bond, and that's just to help us restore, to make sure that when these pipelines are installed, that when they are removed, the right-of-way is restored to the condition it was in before.
Mr. Pignato, would that bond apply only to crossing a trunk highway or county or township roads as well?
I'm just talking about MnDOT's right-of-way.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Now.
Go ahead.
And again, today we require casing of the pipeline, of the actual pipe that goes through our culverts. We require a second casing in case there's a break. I don't know how we would do that with this parallel run, because it doesn't make sense, because these pipelines are like a fire hose, and they're on a big spool, so they spool them out, hook them up, and run them. I don't know if we would be requiring the casing on those parallel runs, because then we're talking a major construction project where they got cranes lifting these casings into place, because those are hard casings that kind of go around it to help protect it. So that's one of those things we'd have to look at. You know, we do have permits that we require that they get from MPCA. We continue to do that. And then I think with the Department of Agriculture, there's this commercial animal waste technician license that we would ask that they would have to continue to do that. And some proof of financial responsibility, we'd also be asking for that. And then just a hold harmless indemnity clause for the department if something did happen. So, but I just wanted to let you know, there was major discussion at MnDOT about this from many different areas, and we just wanted to get our concerns out there. And I'd be willing to answer any questions that anyone would have.
Thanks, Mr. Pignato. Any questions for members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be better given to Representative Torkelson, but I'm curious, these lines must be going parallel now. Are they going along the roadside, or are they currently going on private property on the other side of the ditch?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. As of now, they run on private land adjacent to the ditch or across fields to get from one field to another, but there are some situations where that's just not practical, and that's the reason for this bill. In most cases where it's possible, we would still avoid running these down the ditch. It's not as a matter of convenience. It's more as a matter of necessity. In some situations, there's just no other feasible route to get to some of these fields than to utilize the ditch. So they're forced to load it up and truck it.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you again. And then it seems this is maybe for Mr. Macbeth, but my perception, you know, where I live, these dairies are pretty much out in the country, and we're not seeing them close to the interstates and the major highways. Right? Do we have any sense of, is there much interaction with interstates or trunk highways?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson,
Chair
I would guess there'd be very little interaction with interstates. I don't know the details, but I would guess that would be very rare because it's you're crossing a much wider expanse and probably not necessary. Trunk highways would be a different issue. Trunk highway system, of course, has many more miles, and there are instances now where they do cross perpendicular under the trunk highway. We're just looking to not only be able to do that, but to be able to run parallel in some cases.
Mr. Pignato, any comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the interstate's true. What I'm also talking about is what we call our freeway sections, so like 52. Like from Pine Island into Rochester, we've eliminated most of the crossings, if not all, and that's called a freeway section. And we treat it like an interstate, and we'd like to keep our utilities outside there also because it's a controlled access road.
Follow-up, Representative? Next, Representative Rare.
Other than the coordination issues that you brought up, most of your concerns, such as spillage, doesn't that already exist with the trucking as well?
Mr. Pignato.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it probably does. I can't answer that question, but it probably does. We do have some turning over of vehicles. I would agree.
Representative Herrera, follow-up? And at least the pits in my area, and I'm sure there are some bigger, but once they get started, and if it doesn't rain, we're talking, you know, a couple of days usually to get a pit pumped out, and then you get that hose picked up again. So, as you mentioned, Chair Torkelson, this would not be laying in the ditch for a long period usually, but just a matter of days in most cases, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is absolutely correct, and I would guess that those timelines could be built into whatever permit is necessary from the DOT.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else in the audience who would care to testify? The townships are going to weigh in. Good morning, and please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And I originally wasn't going to say anything, but in light of some of the questions, I maybe can offer a little additional clarification. This is an issue that we get a handful of calls on or emails on every year as to, is it legal? Can we allow them in our road ditch? What's the authority? What's the risks? And I think the gentleman from MnDOT did a very good job of identifying the concerns and risks that are there. You know, that you don't want them up on the improved roadbed, you want them down in the ditch, as far away from the driving surface as possible. most of those things could be done by permit. The thing I think this bill does clarify is, at least at the township level, we don't actually own the right-of-way. We have an easement right to use it for a road, which means we can't grant permission to use somebody else's property, i.e., we can see we're fine from the road ditch aspect. But if you're running across your neighbor's land and that pipe breaks, you've got a trespass issue with your neighbor if you haven't worked it out. This would treat the pumping very similar to a utility, saying it is a lawful use of the right-of-way. It treats it more consistently in that manner. And so we don't have a policy position, is that good or bad, but it would clarify it, what the law would be, that we're treating it like a utility. And I think most of the rest would be dealt with in the permit. Our advice would be, yes, you have the hold harmless, the indemnity language, specific dates. Potentially, if they're from time to time, we also get the question, can we cross the road, not just run parallel with it, but can we cross it to get to the field on the other side? And that's a bigger risk, and so at those times, we try to negotiate, is there a period where we close the road for a day? They would pay for the signage and the barricading and perhaps close the road if there actually needed to be a physical crossing, because we don't want to have the experience of a lot of those piped hoses, whatever they are, being run over by all the other trucks and the liability that would be there. So it doesn't happen a lot, but we do from time to time get the question. And so, again, we deal with that through the permit process.
Thanks, Mr. Sewell. Any questions? If not, thank you. Closing comments on your bill, Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you for hearing this bill, Mr. Chair. I'm certainly willing to work with DOT and other concerned parties as we move through the process.
And Representative Schumacher, would you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to renew my motion that House File 1415 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Policy and Finance.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Next bill on the agenda is House File 1451. And Representative Lewitt, would you care to move that bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 451 for consideration to be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture Finance.
1451, correct?
1451.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Lewick moves that House File 1451 be re-referred to the Committee of Agricultural Finance. Representative Miller, welcome to the committee, and please let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lewick, for moving that. And Mr. Chair, members of this committee, thank you for hearing my bill today. About a month ago in Agriculture Finance, we had a discussion about the livestock industry in Minnesota. There were concerns about its growth or decline in Minnesota and the causes behind this. There was plenty of anecdotal discussion and evidence referenced. However, the question was raised as to whether any of this discussion was in fact true. So I am sure this committee, as was ours, would agree that science should be applied to this discussion. So I spoke to Chair Hamilton about the idea of research on this topic. He encouraged me to write this bill, which is what you have before you. There are two distinct items that I want to emphasize. One, I wanted to include the growth and decline of animal ag in Minnesota and also surrounding states that we compete with in that industry. And number two, I want causes of growth or decline also addressed. This bill does have bipartisan support. I spoke with Commissioner Fredrickson about this project, and he agreed that the MDA could do the work. He also stated it would be good research work to do. I did ask CFANs of the U of M if they thought they would be a better fit. The dean said that they were not equipped at this time to do the research alone, and that they would likely be supporting the research of the MDA anyway. I had the fiscal note that I saw copies there, so I assume you all have the copies. And that fiscal note, if I read it properly, does actually support that the University of Minnesota will be doing quite a bit of this work, I assume through CFANs as well. That's all that I have, Mr. Chair. I stand for questions.
Thanks, Representative Miller. Questions from committee members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank you, Representative Miller. Sometimes things come up in committee, we go, well, we need to look at that deeper, or we need to figure this out. And you step to the plate and follow through on it. So I, when you asked me to co-author, I was glad to do that. And let's move forward and get the study done.
Thank you.
Representative Miller, your two items you want to look at, growth and decline here in this state and surrounding states, is pretty objective. Getting into the causes, who's going to come up with those ideas, and can we do that in a kind of a nonpartisan way, objective way, and get to the actual causes, in your opinion?
I hope so, Mr. Chair. And that's the trust that I have. And I had that discussion with Commissioner Fredrickson, again with the dean. I talked to some other members to some concerns that they had with that. And I guess I would say I'm going to have faith that we come out with an objective information on that. I do believe that this is, as Representative Johnson said, you know, we do need to step up and try and do the best we can to have science on this, and I trust that'll happen.
Yep. Thank you very much. Anybody, any other questions from committee members? Anybody in the audience who would care to testify either for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Miller, any closing comments?
Thank you.
Short and sweet, we like that. Representative Lewick, would you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion for House File 1451 to be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture Finance.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion by Representative Lewick, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And against, same sign. The motion passes. Congratulations. Next bill is House File 1098, And Representative Bly, would you care to move that bill?
Yes, I'd be pleased to, Chair. I move House File 1098 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agricultural Policy Bill.
Thank you. And Representative Sundin, welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for first of all, for hearing this bill. In Ag Finance, about a month ago, we were graced with the presence of some organic farmers from Carlton County, and three generations of this family have farmed the land, and I was just kind of wondering how they turned that farm ownership over to the next generation, that type of thing, because if you have a farm, a lot of times that's your pension fund. That land and your equity in that farm is your pension fund. And I didn't ask them. That's none of my business exactly how they did that. But it takes funds to do that. And I'm certain they're not unique in their needs for borrowing money and, you know, and to purchase a farm. And another side story to that is that particular organic farm was targeted for a pipeline to go directly through it. And they had an option to buy a property right across the land or right across the road from them to expand their farm. Well, we want to see those farms expand, but that wasn't going to happen with that pipeline. They negotiated in good faith in the, with the pipeline industry, and that pipeline was rerouted. And so they're back in business and doing well. But that inspired a little bit of thinking on my part, and I'm just wondering, you know, with the land values going up, you know, everybody wants that land for pipeline or farming or whatever. It's burdensome to farmers looking at expansion for their farms. And another asset or another aspect would be the debt that already incurred by farmers for one piece of equipment, another piece of equipment, or whatever. If they could restructure that debt with the lowering of an interest rates, that would be a tremendous thing. So we looked into the RFA loans, and we're kind of discovering that those loans haven't been updated in 5 or 6 years. So we did take a look at it and, you know, came up with this bill. It's a simple bill. It raises the maximum loan guarantees amounts for 5 ag-related loan programs authorized through the RFA by amounts comparable adjusted back in 2009. The beginning farmer, seller, sponsor, agriculture improvement loans max would increase by $100,000 and go up to $400,000, while the restructure two, the livestock expansion loans would go up to $125,000, up to $525,000. So with me to explain any of the technical aspects of the original program, I guess, is Jim Borboom, and we have some RFA board members as well.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Joining me today is Sandra Ludeman, RFA board member and farmer from Tracy, Minnesota. I've got about 2 minutes of prepared comments that will just highlight how the loan programs benefit Minnesota farmers, a little bit about how the program works. The Rural Finance Authority does offer low-cost financing to Minnesota farmers by buying a portion of the real estate loan. And rather than making loans directly to Minnesota farmers, the RFA partners with 400 participating agriculture lenders throughout the state of Minnesota. These are community banks as well as members of the farm credit system. So we've got a very wide range of partners that work with us in providing services to this program. Farmers that borrow funds through the RFA pay a lower interest rate on the portion of the loan that we carry. And the public-private partnership improves the cash flow for the farmer, but it also allows the farmer access to credit because the banks and the farm credit system are more willing to make a loan to a beginning or entry-level farmer or a farmer who's failing, having some financial adversity, because essentially they, the bank, shares the credit risk with the Rural Finance Authority. So the RFA will purchase 45% of a qualifying loan up to the maximum that's outlined in the bill. In House File 1098, as Representative Sundin outlined, raises the loan maximum and the last adjustment on that loan maximum was done by the 2009 legislature. So there's been occasions over the past few years that loan cap has been adjusted. There are two handouts, I believe, that were circulated for members of the committee. The first one is a chart that lists the dollar maximum of a loan history from the program from the year that it began back in 1986. And if you flip that chart over, you'll see the backside shows the adjustment in 2009, and then prior to that, an adjustment in 2004. The second handout that is circulated this morning just gives members more information about the purpose of the program, the board, as well as some of the features of the various loan programs that are offered by the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. So again, appreciate your support of the bill, and thank you for hearing this.
Mr. Borboom, in a real estate loan, when you partner with a bank, who has first position on that lien?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. We actually share a pro rata. The bank does all the legal work or files the mortgage, and it has to be a first mortgage. And then under a participation agreement that the RFA has with the lead lender, it's a pro rata share on that first mortgage. So there's no first and second. We're just share the first mortgage, 55 for the bank, 45 for the RFA.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? Anybody in the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? Oh, Mr. Ludeman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. I did drive up last night.
Could you please identify yourself again?
Excuse me, Sander Ludeman, and I am a public member of the RFA board. There are some commissioners, and then there are some of us appointed. I actually was appointed in 2009 by Governor Pawlenty, and then reappointed several years ago by Governor Dayton. So currently in my sixth year on the board. I did drive up last evening and had an opportunity to spend a little time with my five-year-old granddaughter last night, and had to help her make her leprechaun trap. And it was a very decorative cardboard box with some sticky tape in the bottom, because she was going to catch that leprechaun so we can get that pot of gold. Well, you and I know leprechauns are pretty hard to catch, and so is that pot of gold. And so I'm speaking on behalf of the members of the board, of the RFA board, who are unanimous in supporting these increases in the five categories of loans you saw, the beginner farmer, seller sponsored, and ag improvement loans up to $400,000, and then the restructuring and livestock improvement up to $525,000. We know that these are very important programs to help beginning farmers. My nephew, actually in the early 2000s, had an opportunity to participate in one of these loans, and certainly helped him get his feet on the ground, and is a very viable and productive producer today. Agriculture has always been very capital intensive, and I think it will remain so. Whether you're an organic farmer, commercial farmer, livestock farmer, capital is the name of the game, and anything that you and I can do to support and help beginning and younger farmers in that avenue as they begin, I think, would be advantageous. One might ask, does this make sense in today's climate with the farms? We know there's declining prices, tighter margins, and so on. But I actually think it's an opportune time because I am one of the more senior members of the farming community, and many of those stayed around the last several years with the exceptional prices that we've had. Now that those prices and stuff are getting tighter, I actually see perhaps a little quicker exit, because now they'll say, now it's time for me to leave and turn the operation over to either a younger family member or a neighbor or something else. So I actually see, even though it's a difficult time, I see it's an opportune time for some younger operators to get started. So I think, looking back, I had an opportunity to start farming in 1970. I paid $196 an acre for some land. My dad said, I'll never make it. $175 is the most I should pay. Well, time proved him wrong. My nephew, as I indicated, he bought some land around $3,000, and that seemed awful high at that time. But again, looking back, it was an opportunity for him to move forward. So on behalf of the board, I would support and hope you would support raising his limits. As my granddaughter left this morning for preschool, she had on her green shirt, because Lucky Leprechaun might show up at preschool today, and it had the phrase on it, dream big. I think this would be an opportunity for helping some young farmers make their dreams come true. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ludeman, are you saying it was more fun when corn was $7 a bushel?
Well, it was more fun.
Very good. Thank you much. We've served on some boards together and appreciate your experience and your knowledge, and you add to that RFA board. Question for Mr. Borboom. By increasing the amount of loans that could be the size of them, does that mean fewer people could take advantage, or is your loan pot also getting larger? How would that affect the number of applications you would have?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we looked at that question, and we took a look at the loan applications we received for the past 3 years, and about 7% of our loans are actually at the maximum or the current maximum. So our estimate is that based on that information going forward, we might expect about 10% of our loan. We'd see an increase of about 10% of loan activity. The range right now is about $10 million to $12 million a year is what we currently underwrite for the loans or the loan volume. We have capacity to meet that increase amount. And the last legislative authorization for our bonds was back in 2012. It was a $33 million authorization. We have $23 million left or are still available in that authorization, so we've got sufficient capacity to meet that.
It's a very good program, and every winter you have a day meeting over at the Department of Ag building. You have a outlook on ag and such, and it's a great program. I missed it this year, but I like to attend it, and you do a good job over there.
Well, thanks for the kind words, Mr. Chairman. I know there are some of your committee members that were there, and we always enjoy hosting that on an annual basis, and we'll look forward to doing it again next year.
Thank you much. Again, the questions from members of the committee or anybody in the audience? If not, Representative Sundin, would you care to have any closing comments in your nice green shirt?
Okay. Thank you, Chair O'Anderson.
Okay. Norwegian Irishman today.
No, this is just a thank you to both members of both parties who signed on for support, and this is a way to keep farmers and communities across the state going strong. So, thank you.
Very good. Representative Sundin, we'll lay over House File 1098 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Policy Bill. So, thank you. Last bill up today is the policy bill. So we will invite Vice Chair Franzen to come up to the chair's table.
The next bill on the agenda is House File 1554. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to move House File 1554.
Representative Anderson moves House File 1554 to put it before the committee. Representative Anderson, you have a delete all amendment. Would you like to move your amendment at this time?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment to House File 1554.
All right. Representative Anderson moves the House File 1554 DE1 amendment to put the bill in the shape he would like to present it to the committee. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Nay. I did it again. All right. Right? All right. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, to your bill as amended.
I hadn't heard that word for a while. Thank you, Madam Chair.
There's Bushisms and then there's Maryisms.
Yeah, the DE1 amendment is the work in progress getting this bill in the shape we'd like to have it, and I'm going to ask Mr. Santo to go over it again. We heard this last week, and some changes, some additions, so we will go through it again and look at each section, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Santo Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'll walk you through parts of the DE-1 amendment. As Chair Anderson correctly put it, this is still a bit of a work in progress. We have sent a few further amendments to Mr. Colby Sullivan. They did not meet the deadline, but I'll talk about the changes that are in the bill that I think are the product of good conversation with stakeholders. I guess the first one I would say is I'd actually like to jump to page 9 of the DE amendment. Maybe do this in reverse order. This was something we didn't discuss at all last time we heard this bill, and so I'd like to talk about, rather than recovering all the same ground again and again, just trying to talk about the ones that we didn't talk about last time. And we skipped the seed exemption law because, as I had stated last time, there were seed exchange libraries that had concerns about being able to do interpersonal sharing. You're familiar with, certainly the chair is familiar with the situation in Duluth, as well as there was industry folks who were concerned about making sure that they weren't creating an unregulated competitor. Last week, we had all the different groups in the same room at the same time. I think we had over 15 different groups and participants, and we came up with the language you see in the bill today. It's on pages 9 and 10. And if you look at the top of page 10, that's the new language. And this has met the approval and support of both sides of the stakeholders. And I know that this phrase gets thrown around a lot, but this is truly the peace in the valley position of both groups. And we're very proud of being able to put forth something that, to our knowledge, has no opposition. Then I'd like to take you to, and I'd be happy to discuss that further, but if not, I will take you to page 5, so moving backward to the bill. We've submitted an amendment. A concern was raised from the structural pest applicators on the provisions on page 4 and 5 regarding record keeping and posting. We are in dialogue with the industry stakeholders there, and we believe that some of those requirements will be deleted and others will remain, but again, we didn't meet the deadline. I found out about that late last week, so by the time I had already submitted the rest of our amendments to Mr. Sullivan, I wasn't in a position to get that language out the door to meet the 24-hour rule. The last thing I'd say is I know that in our original bill, the one that's being amended, we did have on page 11 of the original bill seed fee permit changes, and that was something that had been vetted through the department and the governor's process. We would respectfully request that that be included into the delete all amendment. That is something we think is a kind of a corollary to our budget bill, and so they kind of are go hand in hand. So if you look on page 11, section 18 of the original bill, not the delete all amendment, that's something that the department would respectfully request go back in. And then the last thing I want to cover for you, because again, I don't want to retread the same ground as we continue to refine these bills. I'd like to, you know, kind of narrow it less and less. There is an emergency authority that was brand new, and I'm trying to find it on the, here it is, on page 12 of the delete all amendment. If you look to subdivision 7, emergency powers, and I'll just read it quick and then explain where this came from. It's a very short paragraph. After an emergency declaration issued under chapter 12, chapter 35, or the Federal Stafford Act, the commissioner may restrict the movement of food if the commissioner has probable cause to believe that the movement of food may threaten the agricultural economy, transport a dangerous, infectious, or communicable disease, or threaten the health of animals. The commissioner may provide for the issuance of permits to allow for food to continue to move upon meeting the disease control measures established by the commissioner. As you all recall, we had our very first outbreak in Minnesota of avian influenza, high path avian influenza. This has been kind of sent a shockwave through the system, certainly in the poultry market. And what we realized was, in our response, that the Board of Animal Health had these exact same powers that we're referencing here with regard to the animals. And again, they are vets, and that is their area of expertise, so they focus on the health of the animals. The Department of Agriculture has the charge of ensuring the safety of the food supply. And so as you transition from the Board of Animal Health's emergency powers, which is what they use to be able to address the situation, and we were very, very appreciative of Chair Anderson's compliment to our working hand-in-hand with the board in our response to that outbreak, we realized that if that disease were to get into edible eggs or any other edible poultry products, we did not have the same authority to stop or prevent or permit the continued movement of food if, in fact, there were no scientific reason to hold it up. So basically, we're kind of in this no man's land if what is currently going on and being dealt with in the animal market, the actual live animal birds, if that were to transition into the food supply, we don't have a tool in the toolbox to address it the same way. So, you know, we're trying to learn from recent history here, and this is certainly something that, you know, you don't use these statutes very often, but when you need them, you need them. Luckily, in this case, the Board of Animal Health had this authority to address the situation. And what we're trying to do is to look down the road and say, if, and we hope that never happens, but if we have avian influenza or a similar communicable disease get into the food supply, that we'd be able to address that in a similar emergency method. So with that, that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz. And once again, we would like to commend the department on acting as fast as you did in Pope County there. And to Chair Anderson, how is the smell?
How what?
How is the smell in your county?
It's gone away.
That's
gone
good. Away.
Yeah. I think the wind switched and they whatever happened, but yeah, the smell is no longer an
all
issue.
Right.
Madam Chair, if I could talk about one other piece in the bill. On page 13, we added the agritourism immunity from liability. And again, thanks to Mr. Cruz for helping us along the way. And the parties have all gotten together. The bill was also passed in the Civil Law Committee. And we had to make a few changes. I think the biggest change you'd notice would be on page 14, line 1. We struck out gross negligence and put back in the word negligence. It lowered the bar a little bit, but we feel that we can live with that. And as a result of that, we got agreement by the parties involved. So I'm happy to say that we have peace in the valley on this portion of the bill. And it's something that Mr. Cruz has been working on. The Farmers Union, Tom Peterson, has worked very hard on this issue. And it appears that after a number of years, we will again have agreement, and this can become part of law in the state. To give farmers and such a bit of coverage from the inherent risk of agriculture, that when you go onto a farmer's land, for whatever reason, breakfast on the farm, things like that, you understand there is an inherent risk of being there. This does not excuse the farmer from any, again, anything higher than gross negligence, knowledge of a dangerous condition. So there are still bars that the farmer has to meet, and we certainly expect they will continue meeting those bars. But it does add agritourism to that list of items that there is some relief from liability. So we're happy about that, Madam Chair. And I would stand for questions from members as to the other items in the bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Representative Anderson. And Representative Schultz. No? Oh, Representative Johnson, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to compliment the two of you. I carried the bill last year for agritourism, and this was a pretty large obstacle, and I remember sitting in my office with Mr. Cruz when you first came on, and And we benefited greatly from your legal expertise. And I think you brought a lot to that discussion, and I want to thank you for that. And then Representative Anderson, I think you found the middle ground. And we're always seeking middle ground, and I think it's very appropriate. So my compliments. I look forward to voting for this. It's an important provision and helps, again, I like to make, personally, I like to visit the farm. And if I do something foolish, I don't think I should be able to sue you, Mr. Anderson, whatever farm I happen to be visiting. So thanks a lot for that work on that, guys.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, Representative Johnson. Does anybody else have any questions for the chair? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about the Agri Fund and the extension. I don't think that's in here, and I didn't know if that's a policy issue or that's a finance issue, and just wondering if that's something that where that should be.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Poppy, that's going to be in the Ag Finance Committee bill. It deals with money and funding, so that's where that one's going to be.
All right. Anybody else have any questions for Representative Anderson? All right. Does anybody else wish to testify for or against House File 1554 as amended? All right. Well, as my favorite show growing up was Reading Rainbow, cooperation makes it happen. So thank you to all the committee members and to Representative Anderson and the department for your hard work on this bill.
Thank you, Chair and members.
Members, this bill will be laid over as amended, and be taken up tomorrow. Amendments are due to committee staff by 5 p.m. today. Representative Anderson, do you have any further comments at this time?
No, again, if you would emphasize again the deadline for amendments, and then we'll take the bill up again tomorrow.
All right, yep, 5 p.m. for amendments. And so House File 1554, as amended, is laid over. And members, there's no need to come back tonight, so we are adjourned. Thank you.